You're listening to the Australian Hunting and Beyond podcast with Matt, where we talk about hunting, shooting, fishing, camping, and everything else that the great outdoors has to offer. Let's get into it. Hey guys, just want to say a massive thank you. Last week, episode 45, we hit a massive milestone, 100,000 listens on Spotify and Apple. That is absolutely mind-blowing. I have no idea why you guys want to listen to my rubbish, but truly, thank you. I started the podcast because I just wasn't going to be out hunting as much with changes in my life because of my beautiful family, and it's grown from that because of you guys and your support, sharing the podcast and the kind messages that I get about it and that you're enjoying it so much. So I just really wanted to say thank you very much. And let's get into tonight's one. Matt Irwin, what a superstar. Just what a way to start a deer hunting journey in state forests. Let's do this. All right, one of the things I really wanted to do a lot with the podcast is if I see a cool story, I'm just, you know, encapsulated with it. I want to be in hearing the details. So tonight I've got Matt Irwin on us. I've got Matt Irwin joining us tonight because, man, I had a goal this year, Matt, to get out there and hear a red roar. That was it. Now, unfortunately, that has not occurred. And, well, we're a bit late now, so I'm saying it's going to have to be a 2025 thing. But you, on the other hand, have gone above and beyond that. So I'm a little jealous and envious, but very happy for you as well. So, mate, I really want to hear the story. But first, let's just get into a bit of your background so people have a bit of a knowledge of who you are and how long you've been hunting and all those things.
Awesome, mate. Thanks for having me on the podcast too. Yeah, it's a bit of a short intro for hunting because I've really only got into it in the last 2 years. So I'm still learning, as we all are, nonstop, I gather. So I grew up on a farm. I was always exposed to rifles, shooting, helped to butcher sheep, mules, lambs, put down sick animals and all that kind of stuff. So I sort of was exposed to shooting at a young age, but the mindless shooting never really stuck with me. I didn't like it. I didn't feel like I gained anything from it. I mean, fair enough, you got to cull animals, but it didn't fill the cup that I was after to be filled, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And my friend actually told me to get my gun license because when I've finally grown up and got my own family and life's happening, he said, get your gun license and we can go out hunting together. So we ended up getting all that sorted, a bit of paperwork, a property to shoot on, so and all that kind of stuff. And when I finally got that done, we booked our first hunt and saw nothing, heard nothing, had no idea what we were doing, and basically just spent 2 days walking around the bush with rifles. Bushwalking with guns, we called it.
That's a pretty common thing, isn't it, to start out with?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we saw some goat crap, and I think we heard a roar, but we had no idea what we were listening for. So, and that was 2 years ago now. And we just hiked in on some big high cliff faces, and we sat up on a big ridge that I sort of found us on Google Maps, and we just sat there glassing for the day, you know, watching wallabies and kangaroos and thinking, oh, that's where the deer would be. If I was a deer, I'd be down there, thinking we knew what we were talking about, but we didn't. Yeah, that was my first sort of little foray out into the wilderness. And, you know, we didn't get anything, but I found such fulfillment out of just being out there walking around and just hanging out in the bush for the day that I was hooked straight away. I just was in love with hunting, regardless of not actually seeing anything or firing a single shot. And then I finally got a fallow buck in a state forest, because all my hunting state forests, I don't have any private land. So I spent about 3 days hunting late May last year. So I was quite towards the end of the rut, but the fallow was still running around in groups, obviously, because a group just ran straight into me out of pure luck. You're going to hate me for this, but I was just walking along and I just see a small fallow, maybe a year old, and I'm out there and I'm panicking. I'm just seeing this deer in front of me, and I've been following the sign. I'd been doing all the things that I'd been studying. So I spent a whole 4 or 5 months studying all this information that I could find online, like, you know, Aussie Bush Harvest and heaps of YouTube channels on deer behavior. And I saw this young fallow and I've gone into panic mode, knelt down, and like I've gone to line it up for the shot, and I was going to shoot it straight through the chest, and I thought, oh no, I'm using a 30 caliber, 30-06. If I shoot this tiny little deer, I'm going to have no meat. The whole aim is for me to hunt is to bring meat home. So I tried to go for the headshot out of total inexperience and panic and missed it all, just bang, and then the deer ran off. And I'm sitting there thinking, what have I done? I've stuffed it up. Every deer in the whole area is now gone. I've just ruined my whole hunt. I'm, you know, going into panic mode because I'm inexperienced. I'm a noob. And then I hear another shot about 200 meters away. And I'm like, what? There's other hunters nearby? And I had a mate with me, and I got him on two-way, and I said, mate, was that you? Did you shoot? And he's like, no, I'm 300 meters off to the east. I'm like, oh, there's someone near me. They just shot. And he's like, dude, I'm hearing shots everywhere. So I've just basically knelt down beside a tree and just bunkered down, made sure my, you know, my hat's there, and I'm like, you know, sitting there, because I don't know who's out there shooting as well. And then all of a sudden, literally a whole mob of fallow come running straight through the bush in front of me. And I'm like, oh my God. So I did the hind call that everyone does, a little, you know, meow sort of sound. And a young buck, well, no, he's semi-mature. He was the biggest buck I've ever shot as far as fallow are concerned, just stopped and looked my direction broadside. And I just pulled the gun up straight through the back of the shoulder, and he fell on the spot pretty much. And that was my first ever fallow.
You gotta be happy with that, mate. I don't hate you. Don't. I'm not a monster. Look, the couple of things just in what you're talking about there. It still is a bit unnerving when you hear gunshots very close to you, isn't it?
It got my heart racing.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever something you'll get used to, especially if it's not from your hunting partner, or if, you know, if you hunt with a partner and they're next to you or very, very close, and you've got that communication. But when it's not, and it's just like, oh, some random in the bush has just shot, it is unnerving and unsettling. And I don't think that feeling will ever probably go away, but it is the reality of public land hunting. As you were sort of saying, it's you hunt state forests and it's open
you
to everybody.
Have no idea of who's got the gun.
Well, yeah. And look, to be honest, I mean, we look at the safety record and it's bloody good. So it's,
yeah, it is.
I think it's 100%. Just in your mind half the time, because you don't know where they are or where it's coming from. And it is one of those things. But I mean, realistically, that's part of public land hunting. You can't do much about it. And you have to lean on the fact that everyone's doing the right thing and identifying targets. And, you know, the statistics show that it's probably doing that pretty well, actually. So
it was interesting that you when you bring that up, I met the guys. So my friend comes running along with his high-vis vest on a stick, waving it in the air. Not running, but, you know, walking quickly to get to where I am. And he's got his high-vis stick, waving it in the air, the vest up on the stick. And he gets over to me and sits down, and he goes, I only found you because you put your – I had a bit of high-vis tape in my bag. So, I put it up on in a tree, and he came over and he's like, I found where you are. And then a hind comes running past me, probably about 2 meters away. And he's just, oh, there's a hind there. And I was like, holy crap. And it just ran straight past him back into the bush again. And then 2 minutes later – two hunters then came out from that direction following that hind, the blood trail. They'd actually shot it, but it was still alive. And they were tracking it. And he comes along and I said, oh, I saw your deer. It's gone that way, mate. Head up through there and you'll probably hopefully come across it still and be able to finish it off. And just said a quick g'day. And then they went on their way and we started processing the deer that I had on the ground. I had no idea what to do either. I was there like, okay, this is my first time. And I had this fallow buck that was, you know, pretty sizable. So, and we ran into them later on that day, and they actually spent the whole day trying to find that deer. Old mate looked busted, and he was like, oh, he felt so bad that he couldn't find this deer that he'd injured and couldn't finish off. Like, I could see it in his eyes. And I've actually kept in contact with that guy over Facebook and exchanged numbers and stuff like that. And he's a really, really decent bloke and quite a good hunter as well. So, yeah, it was a real eye-opening experience for my first successful hunt. And, yeah, we spent the two nights, so 3 days camping out there, hung the deer up in a sort of a sheltered area, an old shack that we found, and we ate the heart on hamburgers with rosemary and some really, really old barrel wine that my mate brought down from, because he lived nearby that forest, so he brought it over and we had wine and heart burgers.
Nice way to get accustomed to a harvest.
It was quite interesting. First for me, I basically took the animal back to a friend's place whole, and he ran me through the butchering process entirely, skinning all the rest, and I've still got meat in the freezer from it now, actually. Yeah, so it was successful, scary, and very fulfilling experience, but nothing on the most recent one, which, yeah, I'm keen to get into that whenever you are.
Oh, mate, I'm keen. I've been hanging to hear this story. It's one of the things I really struggle with the podcast sometimes is I'll see a really cool story and I want to talk to the person, but then I don't want to talk to them because I want to have it like fresh and I want the story to be genuine. And it's really hard though, because then I have to schedule it, and we've been talking for a little bit to get it scheduled. Yeah, that whole time I'm just sitting there wanting to know. So I'm more than happy to get straight into it.
All right.
Yeah, let's go, man. Like as I said, I wanted to go out just to hear a roar, and I'm pretty devoed that I didn't get to hear that. But yeah, just reading your post, I was like, man, this is cool. I can't wait. So let's go.
It was the most amazing experience of my life, pretty much up to now. Like, and it the experience with my son took it to a whole nother level, because I could just turn around and look at his face, and then it just hit me to the core. His sheer excitement and the intensity and the magnitude of it all was echoed back onto me tenfold. So, yeah, I've spent since that first hunt learning and trying to get a better understanding of their habits, watching the crap out of everything I can on YouTube and talking to all the hunters I know in my town. And I've just basically picked a new forest to go and scout, because I heard that there are red deer there. So decided to go out. It was a day freed up. A job got cancelled. So I said, all right, I'm going hunting. And I said to my son, do you want to come? He goes, yep. And we basically loaded up the ute and took off. My partner's waving to us down the driveway and we're off in the ute. And we got out there and set up camp that night, and we went glassing and looking around, and we found zero sign. And we're up quite high, the back end of the forest, where there was a lot of high ground, and there was some bordering farmland. So I thought, oh, this would be good, but zero sign where we camped and zero sign where we scouted up first. And I was sort of, oh, okay, this could be bad here, but we'll just go further into it tomorrow when we've got the daylight. So we camped the night out and got up in the morning to a fallow grunting and snorting and carrying on off in the distance. And I thought, well, this is awesome. We can hear some croaking. And so we decide to head straight towards the croaking sound. And we're working our way down the side of the hill. And I've practiced the fallow croak quite a bit. I don't know what my neighbors think's going on, but I've got it down to a fine art. And I'm calling back to this buck, and he's calling back to me. And I'm rah, 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 croaking. And my throat's getting sore, and I'm thinking, oh, he's got to be working his way towards us. And I'm trying to not fall victim to the instinct, to the urge to go down lower. You know, when you start going lower and lower and the wind starts swirling and your position then becomes compromised because the thermal's changing and winds are sort of all over the place in the morning. And I'm trying to resist the urge to go lower. So we kept moving a little bit lower and then staying there and croaking and looking around. And we got down to this point, and I found some fresh scat on the ground, and I was like, ah, oh, deer crap, how good is this? Awesome, 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 we're on here. I'm croaking, and then he went silent, and I thought, oh, all right, we're back to square one, let's just follow this game trail. So we followed a game trail, back up the hill and over to another crest, and we're walking out, and I'm thinking, there's going to be some deer up here for sure. It's a nice flat plateau up on top of the hill. They like to use the shelves to walk around. If you ever notice the game trails, they seem to go from shelf to shelf on all the rises of the hills. So they just like the path of least resistance.
Yep.
And we get up there, and I literally walk out from behind a rock, and there is a young red stag and two hinds just looking straight at us, literally as we just got out of this little rocky outcrop to look out, to like, you know, like you've only literally looked out and they're just looking straight at us. And I'm like, stop, stop, stop. And they've just stood up and taken off. And I said, this is great. There's deer here. This is awesome. This is awesome. They're up in here. They're up in here. So we sort of looked at each other and my son's like, yep, this is good. So we sat down for a little bit and started rattling a pair of the fallow antlers from that first buck that I shot. And I'm rattling away. And we're thinking, oh, we might be able to get him to come back up. You know, he's young, he's immature. He might be silly enough now to come back and, you know, think, oh, that's actually a bit of competition, not two hunters. So rattling away. And we hear this noise behind us, this big crack and bang and branches, and, you know, like it's a noise of something moving in the bush. We stand up and start walking our way that way to get a look over this little crest. Turns out it's just this bird pulling bark off a branch in a tree. We look at each other, look back at the bark on the ground, and then turn around, and that young stag is standing right behind us.
Oh, no.
Looking at us. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like,
how unlucky.
How unlucky. I've gone from the luckiest to this. And I just stood still and he's staring at me and I'm trying to lift up my rifle as slow as I can. And I'm thinking, should I take this shot? Should I take it? What's there? Someone else is probably going to shoot him. It's a state forest. And all these things are going through my mind, but I'm looking at his antlers thinking, I really deep down in my core don't want to shoot this animal because he's going to grow into like a fine stag. His antlers were longer than my arm outstretched and long and thin and pointy and perfect, like just two perfect points. And he was only young but a big animal, and I thought, you're going to be a magnificent beast to get later on in life. And he just took off. I was like, by the time I could get the actual rifle up in my hands, he was gone again. And I just was like, well, maybe it's a good thing, who knows, but still, we've got to control the species as well, being a pest. So had all those thoughts and emotions going through, and we just sat down and had a quick snack together and made another plan. And I said, right, mate, this hill's basically cactus. The hill we were just on, they might be on that one, but I reckon they've probably moved a couple of hills away. So we need to really get moving and get across the other side. So we went through hell and high water, through valleys, creeks, up along ridge lines, and we went two hills over in this really high country and out onto a rocky outcrop. And my son, he's 12, and I'm looking behind me as we're cruising along, and every time I look behind me, he's just there, sweat pouring out of his face, puffed, breathing, and just not a word of complaint. Just 100% dedication to the hunt. I was so super proud. Oh, gives me goosebumps thinking about that. And we get to this rocky outcrop right out on this two ridges away, a good, you know, 2Ks of just hellish country. And we're sitting up there and we're like, I said, let's have our sandwiches. We've got peanut butter and jam sandwiches, nice, easy snack, quick energy. And we sit down on this rock and we're eating away, and I hear this off in the distance, I hear this like, this really faint call. I'm like, what? I look at my son and he looks back at me and I'm like, that was a stag, mate. That's a stag. That's a big stag. And he's miles away. He's over there. He's way over in that other hill. So I just stand up and at the top of my lungs just do the loudest imitation of a stag's call that I can do. Every bit of effort into it. And then we stand there silently on this rock looking down into the valley and at the other hills rolling down there. And I hear from about a K and a half, 2Ks away. I don't know how far away he was, but he was far away. This roar back at me. And I was like, you're kidding. This actually works. I've never done this before. This actually works. And I knew that the idea is to try not to sound too dominating and too confident at the same time, but also sound like you're challenging them. So I was trying to match his sound back at him in a way, as best I could, and his aggression and all of that as best I could. And every time I called, he called back. And he called back even angrier and angrier and angrier every time. I'm like, he's coming this way. I swear, like, he's getting louder. And I've got the binoculars and we're sitting up on the hill and we're both glassing this sort of like edge of a cliff and hill where it's all coming down through really steep terrain. And I see this flash of movement, between the trees. And I'm like, what was that? So I'm looking ahead of it, and into it run two hinds. and then three hinds, and then four hinds, and then this big set of antlers and this big male red deer basically pushing this herd of hinds down the hill towards us like he wants to fight. Oh, man. It was totally surreal and amazing. It's just, he was coming to battle me, like, literally, as fast as he could down the hill.
So, how far away is he at the moment?
Well, he would have been about a K and a half away to start with, calling out. Yep. And only because we were out on this very, like, point of this hill when I was calling into the hills itself. So, I think the echo carried and he was able to hear it and pinpoint my direction from miles away.
Pretty, like, impressive.
Freaking unreal. And to come in to fight, like, he was like, there's something in my territory that doesn't belong here that's going to take my girls. I'm going to, you know, bash him up and take his girls. So, he was, yeah, by the time I saw them, I reckon, oh, by the time I saw them, it would have been getting close to about 500 meters.
Okay. So, you had a fair bit of distance.
Fair bit of distance. So, basically- know
he's coming.
Yeah. The I called for, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes or so. It might have been 15. I don't know how many minutes I was calling for because time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah.
And when I finally saw them, they were a good 500 away and pushing down a far hill, probably at the edge of the boundary of the public land by that stage.
Yep.
So, he was coming down a big valley and then below us was like a ravine where the water was running down into a creek and river. And I said to my son, I said, let's move down here. Let's go. We're going to keep calling him. We're going to move down here and keep calling into this hill so he keeps coming this way. We don't want him to go down the bottom there because we'll never get him out. So, I ran a bit further and calling, and my son's got my phone and he's videoing. I don't know if you watched the video of me calling on there with him. You can hear the deer calling back.
Yeah, no, that was good. I like that.
He's like, this is insane. This is crazy. Like, you can tell he's totally stoked and run down this hill. And I found this, like, edge of the ravine where there was a game trail coming up and into a nice little flat spot. So, I sat up in there and just kept calling and I could hear him, then I couldn't hear him. So, when he would call away from me, I couldn't really hear him. But when he was calling back towards us, it was sounding like he was getting closer and closer. And all of a sudden, you hear like the, you know, the telltale branch snap, you know, something getting trodden on or bumped into. And then, you know, like they're here. So, I'm up on this rock and I'm looking down into all this like thick scrub and prickly bushes and just shit area. And I'm looking down there and I can only see little tiny glimpses of movement. So, I look around and say back, so I say, can you see him? And he's a bit higher than me and behind me and tucked away in a rock watching with his binos. And I said, can you see him? He goes, I can see him. And I said, okay, where are they going? And he goes, I can't see him. They're gone now. Oh, crap. So, let out a few grunts, sort of like it's like you want to call, but you kind of cut it short. And a few little grunts out and then I hear him call back. Louder and more intense than ever before. It sounded like he had like a megaphone, like, and he was just back at me. And I was like, oh crap, he's f***ing close. So I ran, I jumped off that rock because they couldn't get through the little ravine area below me. They came up through that game trail. And I thought, I've got to get on that next rock because I'm going to have a better shot. So I've quickly ran to this rock and dove on it. And I'm laying on it and I'm just silent now, no more calls. And I just keep hearing all the footsteps and the movement in the bush, and I look behind me, and my son, he's up against this this rock next to a tree, but he couldn't actually see them coming in, sadly. He didn't actually get to see the shot. He saw me shoot, but he didn't get to see any of that. He just knew to stay still. And I'm looking through my rifle scope down this game trail, and there's like a tree that's got a V in it, and I just see this head appear in it. And it's a hind, and the hind just comes up and looks around, sniffs the air, and the air was going I think it was a nor'easterly. So, yeah, we were perfectly upwind of them. And the hinds come up and had a sniff and a look around, and then she's come through. And I'm looking and I'm counting these hinds, and I got distracted counting the hinds. I got to 8 hinds. And then when I looked at the first hind, without moving my head, I looked with my eyes because I remember watching Robert Tribbia, what's his name, on the State Forest page. He has a video about not moving your head, using your eyes to look around, and that really stuck with me. So, I'm looking just with my eyes, and I look up to my left, and the first hind that I saw is literally almost standing on me, like right beside me looking around and sniffing the air. And because the wind's just trailing away from them still, they're still upwind of me. She had no idea I was there. And I'm laying on this rock thinking, don't bust me, don't bust me, don't bust me. And then all of a sudden I hear a different sound that I haven't heard before. And it was like a knock on wood, like the antler on the timber as he's coming up. And he took a lower route because he was obviously trying to push his hinds up the hill. And he's come around the other side of the tree on the lower side, and he's literally just come up. And at this stage, it's about 2:30, 3 o'clock-ish, and the sun is shining back down through the trees, and it's still cold, it's still fresh, and he's come up, and the air's coming out of his nose, and he's walking up over this little crest right into my view, steam coming off him. I could smell him. He stank, man. Like, the smell of a rutting stag is something to be... to behold. It's really intimidating. And he's grunting and walking up, and I just had this, like, 30 seconds that felt like an age of just looking at him walking towards me before I had to take the shot. I literally let the crosshairs just fall down from his head, from his antlers, you know, down across his neck right to the shoulder. And then I moved it in a little bit because it was a front-on shot, and pulled the trigger, and he turned around and then fell on his back with his legs in the air. And the bang from the gun just sent the hinds crazy. They were running everywhere. I was afraid I was going to get trampled or my son was going to get run into. He was back further, thankfully. I'm getting goosebumps talking about this now. And I walk over and I've got my first red stag on the ground that I managed to call in with a single shot to a clean kill, which was even more satisfying. And that's how that happened.
Man, how cool. Yeah, that's awesome. I haven't.
It was unreal.
I can't imagine being there. You did a great job of talking us through it, but I still just can't imagine the amount of just questioning yourself in the moment that must have been going on.
Dude, I cannot have enough words to describe everything that happened, and I'm probably missing a lot because it all happened so naturally and it just happened. Like, I find hunting on instinct is the best way to hunt, and everything that I've learned off all these, like, wonderful people that have shared this information on social media and YouTube has made it possible for that to happen, because they've been like gurus for hunting for me, and it allowed me to see what real sign was, what recent sign is, how to use the wind and how to judge thermals, how the wind changes as the temperature changes in the day. My sort of ethos is hunt high, aim low. So, you know, try and stay high and look low and use the terrain to get a better view, to stay out of wind and to not bust all your energy. And all that sort of stuff that people have taught me had attributed to that one moment. And it was the most satisfying thing I've ever done. I want to go and hunt another one now. I can't get enough.
So let's just jump back a little bit.
Yeah.
That first younger stag that you saw, was that the first red stag that you'd seen at all?
That's the first red deer I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it was the first, and he was massive. Like, I was blown away by the size of him. I was like, what? This is huge. This is going to feed my family for months, years. We'll never go hungry again. Like, I was blown away by it and just in awe of how magnificent he was. His antlers were perfect. So, yeah, that was amazing in itself.
Yeah, that's cool. I haven't had the privilege of seeing a red stag, or, you know, when I first got into hunting down at Green Hill State Forest before the bushfires, I did get caught out by three hinds. So I've at least seen reds, so I will say that, but I haven't ever got the chance to see a stag or even hear one, and that's just right up there. So not only did you see one, but you've seen a second in the day and called it in on the first go. Man, that must be just such a exciting feeling that not only did you forget to see two in the one day, you've called one in and then been able to drop him. That's cool. Like, that's just, that's next level. That's so impressive.
It just really felt like pure hunting at its core too, you know, like really hard country, a lot of hard work, a lot of K's on foot, a lot of following sign, a lot of overcoming disappointment. It just had all of the aspects of hunting that makes it great. So, yeah, I don't have many descriptive terms for how it felt, but it felt right and it felt very worthwhile.
So when you're having that conversation, was it going through your head that he's not coming or this is too long, I've been calling for too long, or how were you going and breaking that down at the time? Because if it's the first go at it, that I can see you're questioning yourself a lot.
I think the only questioning I had was, am I calling right? That's what I was most worried about. I was most worried about being too aggressive and scaring him off, making him think that, oh, crap, there might be a bigger deer up here that's going to take my girls and leave me lying in the dirt. So I was mainly aiming to call right. That's what I was most conscious of. And I think that paid off, like following my gut instinct on how he responded and also making sure that I was one step ahead of him. I didn't get time to doubt myself. I had to basically call, move, keep listening to where he's coming from, keep positioning myself and get to an area where I could bottleneck them. So I didn't really get time to doubt myself. It just, yeah, it happened naturally. Like it happened, happened, I guess.
It's one of the ones I always struggle with. And I was talking about this with the boys from the Hunters Campfire on their deer camp up in Nundle. Is I struggle just to sit and stay sitting. It's probably...
That was hard. I do admit that was hard.
Yeah, it's probably something that... It's why I don't get as many deer as other people. I know that a lot of people, especially newer hunters that are sitting still in good areas, it's a patience game. Like sitting off scrapes, especially in this time of the year, it's probably going to pay off. They're going to come back there. It might not be today. It might be tomorrow. It might be the next day, but they're going to come. But for me, I really struggle to sit more than 2 hours.
I can't sit for that long. I probably didn't, or it might have been an hour or so of to and froing, but it wasn't like I was sitting there silently, patiently waiting for, you know, them to come walking through. I heard the call in the distance and acted on that, and then... I've found a couple of rubs before. I found what I thought was a scrape, but I still don't have enough experience really to identify that. And I don't think I'd be able to sit there for 2 hours. I've never tried it. So it was very much an active hunt. And then the patience part came in when they were getting close. And I just knew that if I move, I'm going to give up my position. I just need to stay still and call or grunt just a few little telltale noises that they will respond to and not anything more than that. I mean, I don't know how long I laid on that rock for, but I laid on two different rocks. So maybe there was like half an hour of laying on stone there on, you know, before I actually got to take the shot. So yeah, there was no 2 hour waiting. It was all pretty active and moving, which was good because that's my style of hunting as well. I'm very much the same as I need to move around and look around and, you know, be hunting.
Yeah, I find it more fun. And I mean, at the end of the day, I think for me going out hunting, I'm there to enjoy myself. And if it means not taking deer because I'm exploring and walking, I'm happy to do that. Like that's fine. I can sort of, when you weigh up your options, I'm happy to say, hey, I could bump deer, I could spook deer, but that's more enjoyable for me than just sitting there and waiting for long periods of time. So, and it's not saying that it's the wrong way to do it. Like, I believe that everybody should hunt the way they want to hunt and what they enjoy.
Oh, 100%. So you got to love it.
If they like sitting there, by all means, go for it. I'm not bagging you out in the slightest. I'm saying I can't do that. That's not what entices me to be out there. But whatever suits you and you want to do, go, like, you know, as long as it's legal, go for it. That's awesome. You said something interesting there. You were talking about that he was calling away from you and you didn't hear him, and it just resonated with me a little bit, because I tried to do a sit and wait on a couple of the rubs. So I'll get into it more in another episode, but I had sort of mapped out a patch up in Nundle and was in there exploring and spent a fair bit of time exploring, found the rubs, found sign, got busted by the buck across the gully one morning. And so sort of had a good idea where he was, and another hunter had come into the area and he found the scrapes and he found rubs as well. So I hadn't got to them. I hadn't found them. And so we went back one evening to sit there, and they were literally probably at max 100 meters away from each other. Mm-hmm. We actually drew it out using a Venza from where I'd seen him, where my rubs and all the sign was, and where he'd found the scrapes. So we went in with a bit of a plan. We were able to sit there for about an hour and a half. Coming into obviously evening, last shooting light, and I was thinking, oh, this will, one of us surely will get to see something or whatnot. And it started to get to the point where I was like, well, nothing's really happening. So I've got the croaker there from H2K Hunting Calls, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to just rip it out and start croaking and see what happens. Really good, supposed to be peak rut. Let's see what happens here. Interesting is my mate could not hear me croaking at all. Now, max, he was 150 meters away. Max.
Really?
Yep. Just, and terrain-wise, we were probably on the same level. So we were on a very sort of flat patch up high. Yeah, very interesting. Because I thought, oh, he'll be hearing this for sure. And I didn't want to spook anything out of his area or, you know, impact his hunt. So I sort of left it very last minute to start croaking because of that. But he said he could not hear me at all. And in fact, I'd actually gone at his direction. Now, the wind was probably coming from him to me. So that's the only other thing I can think. Not super windy. No, maybe 10 knots max. Max. Like, it was pretty light. Was moving because I did myself an injustice of standing downwind of a dead pig. So that was a lovely time to sit and wait. You know, I struggle to sit and wait, and then I'll put myself in the downwind of this pig.
Yeah, they smell the worst too.
Geez, it'd been shot probably, I'd been out there for probably a few days, I reckon. And man, it was rank. And I moved three times trying to avoid it, and every single time the wind must have just shifted a little bit and brought it straight at me. It was doing my head in because I'm sitting there going, oh, man, I hate sitting waiting at the best of times, and this is just making it 10 times worse. It was just so frustrating, but that's part of it, isn't it? So
it is.
Yeah, look, it was. I just found that really interesting for me, something that I was – mindful of that if he couldn't hear me that close, and we know we were that close because, like, when we obviously last shooting light came, it got dark real quick and we had a bit of a storm pick up as well, but I could see his headlight where we said we were going to meet. So, and that was not that was not very far. It's probably only like between 20 and 50 meters from where he was, and I could see it from where I was. So it wasn't very far, and yet he could not hear me going at it. And
that's interesting.
And I was loud. Like, it was not something that I thought was, like, I wasn't being super quiet. I was definitely trying to get the noise out there. I know it was carrying down the gully, but yeah, even being on the same thing, little bit of wind, you know, just interesting for me to say, okay, wow, if I was trying to get deer to hear me, all that area would have been, I'm guessing they probably wouldn't have been hearing me like he was.
This red stag was two hills away. So as a crow flies, probably 1,300 to 1,500 meters away when I heard him first call. And when I called back, I just called as loud as I could. I didn't have any calling devices or trumpet or like whatever people use, horns, stuff like that. I just put my hands in like a cup around my mouth and just did the roar back as loud as I could. And I sort of aimed it like along in line with the hill lines. So like it wasn't out into the open, out into the air, up in the air. It was like aimed directly in line with the ridge lines. And then I got a call straight back. So my call obviously
got out
reached
there
him
enough.
Because he called back and he's I've eaten him. So, obviously,
it worked.
It obviously reaches. As far as the fallow grunts I was doing in the morning, I do a bit of like a nasal inhalation style grunt. It's almost like a pig snort, but I sort of do like I go in through the nose and out through the mouth like you're playing a didgeridoo. And I can get it really loud, but it takes a real toll on the back of my throat and my sinus.
Yeah.
So, when I do that, I do it and throw it as loud as I can. And I was getting responses from the fallow as well, but he didn't come looking for me. So, the only thing I could really attribute to that would be he is down there on some nice patch of grass with plenty of hinds with him, or he's just young and naive and just croaking. Because he didn't come up into the bush to me. He obviously wanted me to go to him until he went silent.
It's super cool. I was playing around with a buck down south. Not this hunt, the one before, and we probably were croaking back and forth for a good 20 minutes. Man, it was cool. Just, I could hear, he was coming in, he'd get closer, then he'd back off and come in and back off, and it was such a long period of time. But then that also then had me questioning everything, going, well, why is he coming in, and then why is he backing off? Am I being too dominant? Am I doing too many? It's such a gamble when you're doing it. And if you haven't got that experience, I don't have that experience, and I'm more than happy to say that. So it's all a learning curve, seeing what works and what doesn't, which is awesome. But the other thing is, it's such a small period that this happens. And if you don't get away that often, you know, I got three hunts. Two. There was a pre-scout and then two that I felt were in that period where you could, one where you could rattle and croak, and the other one was just a croaking sort of time. And there was only the one go at it. And even up in Nundle was real quiet. I don't know what happened up there. It was supposed to be peak rut. Great time for it. Did not hear anything. It was
a weird start to this year. Everyone seems to be saying that. I've been following the pages and listening to all the experienced veteran hunters talking about how this rut has panned out. And they said that it's been probably the weirdest one that they've had in a while, with like temperature, the times of when the deer are making noise, and the quantity of noise that's being made. Some places have got nothing. Other places have got deer roaring and croaking off their head.
Mm.
So, yeah, maybe part luck, other part knowing an area. I think knowing an area is very important. My main fallow area that I hunt, I've done countless Ks there now, where I've just been walking through the bush, bumping mobs, not really worrying about getting a shot off, but just worrying about finding the deer, finding where the deer are at, where they're going to eat, where they're traveling through, where the easiest paths of least resistance are, and just keeping all that information in my head, and, you know, using a Venza to mark points. And If I want an easy deer now, I just go to a forest that I know well, and I can usually find my way to a deer. And if I'm patient enough, and I move differently depending on my purpose. If I'm there to explore and learn, I'm moving quickly. I'm pulling up, looking at sign, but then I'm moving again. If I'm there hunting, I'm only moving, you know, in 20-meter increments at most. Unless I'm going through an area where I really want to get from point A to point B, but I'm going there with a purpose and I'm moving, and I'm only glancing at sign. If there's something that really catches my eye, I'll stop and look at it, but I will keep moving until I get to that next tree to look and glass. And, you know, like if I'm going there to kill, the purpose is totally different. The feel's totally different.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. It's one of those ones I've said previously that I think you've got to spend time in doing the opposite of what I've done and jumping from forest to forest and only spending one or two times there. You've got a pattern.
Mate, put the baby carriers on and go bushwalking as much as you can in the state forest.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the toughest ones. Like, obviously, it sounds like you're relatively close to some state forests.
Yeah, I am. I'm pretty lucky.
Yeah, that makes it – like, I'm envious of that, because it makes it a bit more achievable when – you've got that sort of smaller drive. Like, I tend to drive minimum sort of 3.5 hours. So that's
that's a real commitment to correct. Get there and do that in the morning. I mean, I know guys that do that.
Yeah, and with a young family, I can't. And, you know, it doesn't bother me. Like, you know, if I had to pick between my family and hunting, I just wouldn't hunt. But the reality is doesn't allow to conducive results all the time. And being able to pattern a forest, and that's what I was a bit disappointed in this year's rut, in the sense that I'd done the scouting, I'd found some fantastic areas, and unfortunately when I went back there for the second time, really confident that I'd be able to start rattling things in and getting on scrapes and rattling, there was just a million hunters in there, and that whole patch was, you know, I saw six hunters.
Yeah, orange season.
Oh, it was a killer, because I sort of sat there and just went, man, that all that hard work has now just been thrown out the window. And I'm not the type of bloke who would just go in where they are and start hunting the same patch. That's, you know, that's just not me. So I sort of sat there and went, I've spent all this time and effort and traveling and whatnot, and then the whole thing's been thrown out. Now, that's public land. That, you know, you can't do much about that, and it's frustrating, but I'm not complaining. It's just one of those things. So it's now made me think for next year, now I've got to start thinking, where am I going to go and how can I minimize the chance of having hunters be in the same spot? So I'm thinking I'll just get rid of Maragul North altogether and not go back there to hunt there for fallow, especially in that peak time, because it's sort of pointless, in my opinion, for going and spending a lot of time in that forest when you get there and there's a million hunters there. So now I need to either go, well, if I go back to Maragul North, I now need to scout somewhere that is so far off the tracks that people aren't going to be. But then that comes back, that causes more issues as well.
They're time consuming.
Well, not just time consuming, but then you start to think, okay, how far do I have to travel to get to the hunting spot? So if you're getting in there at first light and you've got a 5K walk to get away from everybody else, that's a big time. And technically the rules are you shouldn't be going through your hunting area to get to your hunting area before first light. You should still, you know, you shouldn't have left the car, sort of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of a grey area. I mean, I've like if you're, say, once you've got a gun in your hands, you're basically hunting, aren't you? So
pretty much.
Like, are you not meant to sit in your camp and get ready in the dark? Like, what, you know?
I was lucky enough to chat to a DPI ranger about it. And the reality is that his position was, if you are out there walking around the forest with your rifle before the sun has come up, before that 30 minutes before sunrise, you're technically hunting. Now, this is where it gets really tricky, isn't it? So you're sort of sitting there going, okay, I get that. That's the prime time. If I'm 5 kilometers from the road, man, I've got a bit of an issue here. Now, people do what they want. That's from my interpretation of the rules. That's after having a chat with a DPI guy. That's where I sit on it. And, hey, people need to make their own choices and do what they want. But for me, then that becomes another issue. And then some forests are just have a lot more roads than others. Like if you talk about Maragul North, it's not one that's heavily logged. So there's not as many roads down there around the joint. So it's not like I've noticed Nundal. There was just roads everywhere. And I will say the condition of the roads up there, bloody brilliant. So good. I don't think I went down a road that I was like, this is a tough road. It was awesome. But there's so many. So there is so much opportunity for you to get to a spot early, easily, not that far from the road, but also maybe where someone hasn't been as well. So it's sort of that.
That's why they're so, I think that's why those forests get hit hard though. Like that's why there's, you know, rut time. They're just fully booked, full of hunters because of the ease of access. If you go to somewhere where you might have to do a little bit of four-wheel driving, or, you know, you've got to go into the back of the forest or up into where people, you know, it takes a little bit of effort or time. You're going to run into less people. It's like a rule of thumb. I've always found that. I run in the easy areas that I hunt, I always run into other hunters or see other signs of hunters or cars, or, you know, go in the forest might seem spooked. But when I go a little bit further into the forest and just go to an area where it's a little bit harder to get to, a little more effort, it always seems to pay off, I believe.
Yeah, and look, it makes sense. I mean, it does make sense from that point of view. It's one that sort of tricks me a little bit with like Maragul North, because there's not a heap of roads. There's not a heap of roads there for that forest. And
yeah, okay.
So the reality is that unless you're hunting next to the road, there's a fair bit of distance around that you have to travel to get to spots. So it's not one that...
I've never been to Moorangal before. I've heard lots about it, but I've never.
Well, there's two. Moorangal South is different to Moorangal North. So they're very different forests from my understanding. I haven't been to Moorangal South, but having spoken to a lot of mates and looking in the maps compared, very different in the sense that a lot more roads, a lot more places, bit different in how it's set up. So it's very popular, has a high amount of deer in there, like all the things. That's why it's balloted, obviously. Moorangal North, not balloted, but this year, heap of hunters. I couldn't get a spot in there. I didn't do the old midnight thing. I sort of jumped on it like 3 a.m. Yeah. when I woke yeah. up and whatnot, but that was, you know, a bit too late. And that's life. That's public land again. So it was one of those ones that, yeah, it's puzzling for me a little bit in that there's a lot of people that hit it, but it's not one of those forests where you can go everywhere. So I think that you're going to be hunting on top of each other a lot more, and then a couple of the roads are pretty ordinary, and especially if it's wet. So
yeah, they yeah. become impassable. Yeah, I just put a winch on my ute for that purpose because I was almost getting stuck in places and getting too far into country where I was like, if I get stuck here, I've got a long walk to go and get some service.
Yeah. Well, one of the spots down there, I was chatting to another bloke and he has a winch and he said, lucky he had to get his mate to pull him out. He said there was nothing there to winch off.
Yeah, okay.
And that's a pretty common thing down there. There's one part of the road that it's pretty common knowledge that it's an absolute shit fight and the ruts are pretty deep. And if it's been wet, you can get yourself in stuck pretty quickly, you know, and then that adds another element to it as well, because then you know, can burn 3-4 hours, you know, just trying to get yourself out, if you can get yourself mm-hmm. out. And, you know, like, yes, it's all over the place.
That stag that I got, it was like a really hard trek to get any of it out. Like I took both legs out and it took me about 2 hours round trip to get the legs to my ute and the ute into a better place and all that, just to get back down there and start getting more meat off the animal. I just hung up what meat I could and all that kind of stuff. But the road access to that forest was quite easy. I'd never been to the forest where I got the red stag from before. I'd literally just popped up green one day, and as I was browsing through, and I was like, that's my day off this week. The job's been cancelled, so I'll just go out there and have a look.
Yeah, ripper.
Fully unexplored. Whereas my main forest is like always booked out this time of year. It's very hard to get in there, but it's also very easily accessible. The roads are great. And it's undulating terrain. It's not like super steep country with, like, you know, a lot of work to go and get an animal or to get meat out. And I always find that forest is a lot more busy, especially in rut time, than some of the others that I've looked at.
I tend to think most people will hit the forests that have high concentrations of deer and if they're known for that too. So it is one that, when you talk to people and where they're wanting to go and what they're sitting up for at midnight to try and get that spot in that peak rut time, it's the forests that are well known to have higher amounts of deer in there, especially the species that you're chasing. And look, that makes complete sense.
I know a great solution, and that would be to open up national parks for hunting in some sort of managed manner. That would be
ideal.
A solution for that, and it would also help with pest management.
Yeah, they won't do it.
I know. It's a pipe dream. I just would love to see something like that.
Especially when there is so many national parks out there that are prime real estate that people don't even use. I was talking about my wife this week. Lucky enough, one of mates, we were able to go and chop some firewood at her joint. And we both just at the same time said, how good would it be if we could just do this at a national park?
Yeah, I've had this conversation.
You know, and it's just like you see the fires go through, you see all this. It's a sustainable thing. It's just nuts. And you just sit there and go, just very frustrating. And then no one's using it. They're just locked up. They're just so pointless. I just don't.
I think it should be a God-given right to hunt in our parks, in our natural environment. I think that you should be allowed to do that, and it should be a promoted thing. But also managed in a way that people adhere to ethics and people held accountable for misconduct and things like that as well. It's something hard to try and visualize, but I don't know. I'd love to see it.
Oh, so would I. You're preaching to the choir. I can't see a day where that happens. Just, you know, in this time, this day and age that we live in, unfortunately, we're just getting to the point where we are amongst the minority. And especially, I thought that might change a lot with COVID and people seeing the gaps in the supply chain. Mm-hmm. And that might promote a lot more hunting. But now I think people have just forgotten. It's like anything, a little bit of time passes and people just forget, and that they yep. get lulled back into that false sense of security and what is able to, you know, what life is, I suppose. And they're not even thinking about that again.
My freezer gets low and I want to get back out.
yeah, it's just very different. So that is part of it. Look, at the end of the day, I'm very grateful that we've got public land, as I'm sure you are, because as you mentioned before, you don't 100% have any private access, and you know
it's all public.
Thankfully
for me,
I don't have any deer access. So without public land, man, it'd be just devastating that I wouldn't be able to get out and chase these awesome creatures. So I know you're in the same boat, and man, hearing your story and with your son, the whole thing, mate, props to you. It's just such fantastic. You know, it's just fantastic. I love it.
Thanks, mate. It was, 100% fantastic. I definitely can't wait to get back out and start bushwalking again, bushwalking with guns or bushwalking without, with binos, whatever. Like, just being out there is, it's just better. That's all I can say.
Mate, at the end of the day, any day out there is better than a day at work, and it's all just a learning experience. I'd never, ever go away and not take something back out of it and go, that I could have done that differently, or just even if it's that thought-provoking nature of, hey, I stuffed up here, or what could I have done here? Just questioning and talking, and that's part of the learning experience. So it's awesome. And, mate, for you to see two on the same day and get the bigger one, that's bloody unreal. It's and in a forest that you'd never hunted before, that's just tops. Like, it does show me that people can do it. And, you know, as you said, just get out there, and you can't shoot them from the couch, which is definitely true. So the more you're out there, I feel the higher level of success you're going to have. So well done again, mate. That's bloody awesome.
Yeah, man, 100%. Yeah, thanks, mate. I appreciate you having me on the show to talk about it.
No, all good. My absolute pleasure, and I'm glad you came on to share. So if you're a new hunter, and I'm in that bracket that I haven't even heard of red deer, so as I said at the start, I'm envious that you've got out and done it, and super happy for you, obviously, but envious that I haven't been in that position to hear one just yet. But hey, my time will come, so super excited, hopefully next year, and I'll get back out there and maybe spend a bit more time trying to find some red areas in public land. But
definitely.
All right, mate, really appreciate you coming on. Thanks for sharing. Fantastic, and even better with your son there. That's making memories that are just going to last a lifetime. So well done on that.
Thanks, mate.
All right, listeners, hope you've enjoyed like I have. Bye for now. If you have a topic, guest, question, or any gear that you want to hear about on the podcast, shoot us an email, australianhuntingandbeyond@gmail.com. Alternatively, find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All the links are in the show notes. If you haven't already, make sure you give us a review and subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.